So if you've ever ridden a multi-speed bicycle, you start out in a gear that makes sense for starting out. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I'm starting out. And then I want more yield out of this bicycle. So what do? Well, most of us just start pedaling faster. And we pedal faster and pedal faster and pedal faster. Experienced riders, they shift gears. And until or unless they shift gears, they're just going to burn themselves out.
Hey, everyone. This is Justin, and you're listening to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. Welcome back, and I hope you enjoy this episode with Brett Gilliland, founder and CEO of Elite Entrepreneurs, a company that specializes in giving seven-figure business owners the knowledge, processes, and tools to grow to $10 million and beyond. Brett is an expert in organization development, leadership, and strategy, and spent 10 years helping Infusionsoft grow from $7 million in revenue to over $100 million. Today, we're discussing the difference between a $1 million operator and a $10 million operator, the importance of setting the vision in your organization, and why scaling is the key to unlocking all the lifestyle benefits of being a business owner. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays.
All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
This is cool. Thanks for coming on. We're excited to have you on the pod today. And I think our listeners are going to be able to benefit from your experience and your knowledge and what you do. So if you can, let's kick it off. Introduce yourself to our audience. Tell us a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey and what you're currently doing today.
Sure. I'll do you the favor of saying my last name so you don't have to try. So my name is Brett Gilliland, and I actually say co-founder and CEO of a business called Elite Entrepreneurs. I'm a little bit of an accidental entrepreneur. I know that's not the first time anybody's ever said that phrase. I didn't plan to be an entrepreneur, a business owner. And there is a difference between a business owner and an entrepreneur. We kind of talked about that a little bit. But my expertise is actually leadership and organization development. That's who I am. I did that work in other companies. I was working at an exciting software company that was trying to grow, and we were at seven figures, and I was brought in to help them. They already had a great culture, but they wanted to keep it alive as they grew, and I was brought in to help them scale their business. And so we did that. We grew to 10 million, we grew to 30 million, we grew to 100 million. And I was right alongside one of the co-founders, the CEO there. I was in the cockpit with him as we were doing that. And so we were growing fast. We were winning these top 25 best small workplaces in America, which was a source of pride and accomplishment
Very
for
cool.
me. So we were doing it well. And we were serving tens of thousands of small businesses. This is how I came to be a business owner, is this one little fact. If we were serving consumers, if we were serving enterprise, whatever, this would never have happened. But we were serving small businesses with software to help them with their marketing and sales. And they saw how well we were growing. They saw the scaling work we were doing. They were interacting with our people and saying, where are you finding these people? They're incredible. Like, how are you doing this? And they wanted us to teach them how we were building a great team and a great business. And so the CEO of that company and I, we built a little, it was like a little boot camp type of thing, 2.5 day experience intensive, right? We were teaching them how to do this business building thing, and it was well received. And then we did it again, and we started like, well, there's a little business here. So we built a business inside of that company, basically a training and coaching business, right? Like here's a method that we've learned, and we built it our own little way. But then we started building a community around it and coaching these businesses. And anyway, long story short, 6 years ago, a little longer than 6 years ago, I bought that training and coaching business and spun it out.
Interesting.
And so otherwise, I'd probably still be helping other businesses do this, you know, one or two or five at a time. But now we've created a whole elite entrepreneurs community of seven-figure business owners who are trying to figure out how to go from scrappy, gritty founder, entrepreneur to capable business building leader or CEO or whatever you like to call yourself, right? Like there's a transition from being in it and being involved with everything and doing it to now I know how to actually rise above all the doing and start leading and leading leaders and doing the structure and the processes. And anyway, that's what we do. I'm a little excited about it. That's what I get to do every day.
Very cool. Good for you. So I'm texting with a client of mine last week. If you're not familiar with what we do, we consult with prospective franchise owners. We help them determine whether or not they want to own a franchise, and then we help them determine which brand is the right fit for them. So I'm texting with a client, and he is currently talking to franchisors. He's in the later stages of the process where he's speaking to existing franchisees in the system and approaching what we call Discovery Day, where he's about to go spend some time with the leadership of that company to kind of make his final decision and get his approval. And I reached out and said, hey, we're approaching Discovery Day. How are you feeling? And he said, I feel good. I'm talking to a bunch of franchise owners, and there's just something there that's irking me that I just can't seem to get comfortable with. And I said, well, what is that? He said, I've spoken to three people who are in business for about the same period of time, 2 to 3 years. One guy is approaching 2 to 3 million in sales. One is doing 1 million. And then there's another guy who's doing about 400,000. And I said, all right, you know, for me, it sounds pretty normal, right? What's the problem? What are you expecting to hear? And he said, well, I would at least expect some consistency, right? And it's true. I think when people are coming into franchise, the question's like, what does this franchisor do? This business just produces 10 million in sales. And as you know, that's not the case, right? A lot of it has to do with the operator. So how would you answer that question for him? What is the difference between the $400,000 guy, the $1 million guy, the $3 million guy, and the $10 million operator?
I'll use a little reference that we like to talk about a lot, and it has to do with the ones and threes of revenue. So it's fascinating to me that you shared the numbers that you...
Ones and threes, want. Yeah.
For us, there's a stage change on the ones and threes of revenue. And this might be a little different in franchise land. That's your domain expertise. It's not mine. But I think these stages hold pretty well. I think you'll find that it resonates with you. What happens is for most businesses, and franchises might be a little different, but for most businesses, the founder or the founders are trying to figure out from 100,000 to 300,000, they're just trying to figure out how to sell. Like, we got to sell the thing. There's a self-employed side hustle, dollars for hours thing that they do maybe to earn a living on the front end. But to go from 100,000 to 300,000, they're trying to figure out how to sell. From 300,000 to 1 million, they're like, okay, we learned how to find enough product market fit or service market fit. So the thing works, but can we scale this operation? So can we get lead generation happening consistently, predictably? Can we get the delivery, the fulfillment to happen at scale? Like, can we actually build a team around this and do this at a higher level? Then they get to that $1 million and they're like, okay, we got this thing off the ground. But then there's this business scaling thing that starts to happen next from 1 million to 3 million. It's like, can we do that at a next level? And so when you said 400,000, you know, around 1 million and 2 to 3 million, I was like, awesome, right? They're getting stuck at these stages, and it's not the business model. It's not the franchise. Now, you know, there are differences between franchises. So to some extent, maybe it does have something to do with the franchise, but there are these predictable stages of business growth, and the obstacles at each stage are kind of known. And if you get stuck on that, then you start to plateau at that spot. Anyway, that's one way I would talk about it. And then I'm going to give one more framing, and then you can take us where you want to
go. Sure.
So the other framing is how we add value in the business. And so the guy that was stuck at 400,000, I'm guessing, got stuck in the learning and doing aspects. So there's like learning and doing to add value in a business. And then there's leading, And that, you know, that $1 million guy, either he sort of maxed out the learning and doing end of things, or he started to learn how to start to do some leading things, build a team, start to scale. At 3 million though, he definitely would have had to figure out some leadership. And then there's leading leaders to go from 3 to 10 million. So how we have to evolve in our role as the franchisee or as the business owner, we got to go from learning and doing at first, like we're learning everything about the business at first, and that's understandable, but then we have to shift to leading and eventually leading leaders. And it sort of coincides with that 1 in 3 thing I was talking about of revenue growth. Just two different ways to talk about that same thing. So it makes perfect sense to me that you could see, even within the same franchise group, you could see franchises performing at vastly different levels based on how that owner is moving through the how I add value from learning and doing to leading, and then how they're mastering the key hurdles or the key things to go through the growth stages.
So when I think about things that could hold someone back or prevent them from growing, I think about skill, effort, mindset. It sounds like a lot of it is just leadership. Are leaders born, or can someone learn how to be a good leader? Like, can anyone be a $5 to $10 million operator? Or is it, no, some people are just $500,000 to $1 million business owners, which is okay for them.
I have this very like ideal view of the world, Justin, that it might be a little naive, but I'm just optimistic enough and have enough belief in people that I'm like, my real answer, the one I want to give, is anybody can do it. And the reason that I can still say that with some level of confidence is I've seen people do it who I didn't, you know, at first I was like, most people would say this person can't do it, but they're doing it and I see it. So I believe that it's possible. On the other hand, I have seen some people who just can't get out of their own way. And they just, for whatever reason, they can't get over. And I think it's certain mental hiccups. You called it mindset. I like using that term as well, but it's almost like I've got some defective code in my thinking or my belief about others, and I can't get over that. And so they can't fully step into some of those good leadership practices and traits. So I'd like to say anybody can. I have seen a few that just don't get there, and they give up on themselves, or you know, they're like, okay, I don't want to keep doing this.
Well, I think a lot of it could be fear as well. While fear can be the greatest motivator, like we love fear, right? I think in a lot of ways it's what drives people to be successful, the fear of failure.
The adrenaline rush.
Yeah. Right? Like, why are you successful as a business owner? Because I'm afraid of failing. So I'm going to get out of bed every morning to go fight to win and be successful in business. But there's that fear, if not harnessed the right way, could hold someone back. And we see this from both the franchisor side, when we talk to small business owners who say, I think this business could be successful all over the country, but this is my baby. This is my brand that I built, and I'm afraid to put it in the hands of someone else. We also see that same thing happening from the little local franchisee who's in a service business and who has his first van that's doing $300,000 in sales. And 2 years later, we're saying, hey, why have you not brought on the second van with the second technician? Well, I don't have enough revenue to do that. Well, how could you have the revenue if you don't bring the van on and hire the person to do the work, right? So talk about that fear a little bit. And when is the right time to make that investment, to add the infrastructure, to add that next employee? How do we make those decisions?
Yeah, that fear can be crippling. And it's, you know, it's so funny because, or interesting or weird, whatever, I don't know the right word, but it's fascinating to me that the very people who went out on a limb to begin with, this is like different risk tolerances, right? It's like, I'll risk up to 300,000 a year in revenue, but then that next jump just feels a little too dicey for me. It's like, you left the full-time job to do this. You bought the van, you did the thing, you got it there. And then it's like, okay, but now this is my new comfort zone. And so I don't know that I could do it after that. Like, you've already done it, you know, like.
Right, the hardest step is that initial leap, right?
I mean, You and I, we think that.
Yeah.
It was for me. That's why I said I'm an accidental entrepreneur. I don't know that I would have done the first leap.
Mm.
But once we had this thing, the thing was working. We had built it inside the safety of this other bigger company, right? $100 million company, $1.5 million little business down here. But I didn't have to do that 0 to 1 on my own. Like it was safe. And then now like, okay, now I can just do this because I know what to do. But for some people, it's different. It's like they're willing to take that first step. It didn't feel very risky. But now that they have something and I'm like my team members counting on me and I got to pay these bills, whatever happens, the pressure of that starts to build and they go, I can't do that next leap. So I don't know. What I would encourage people to do, Justin, is get clear on revenue per employee and get clear on like some basic math about payback times. Because if you can start to show your brain logically, because we're getting frozen in an emotional state, right? The emotional side of it is winning. If we can start to show ourselves some math that at least starts to open up a little crack of belief in the emotional side of our brain that's freaking out a little bit, it might calm that down enough to say, you know what? I did this once. What if I had to start again? What would I do if I started again? Oh, well, I would do this, this, and that. Okay. Let's lean on the past success and then let's use some math to show a viable path to a future that we can accept and then start taking some steps forward.
Interesting. When talking about this stuff, I think back to The E-Myth by Michael Gerber.
Yeah,
right. Classic. I mean, it's like the book that everyone always brings up, working on the business, not in the business, those different roles, technician, manager, you know, business owner, entrepreneur, right? Yeah. So what are those? There are certain roles that the business owner, entrepreneur should be taking on that they just, you know, some things need to be delegated. And then there's a role that like, no, as the business owner, this is your focus. What is that? Like, what do we delegate?
I'm going to give you three things, okay? These are the hats.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't care how many you start with. Whatever number of hats you have right now, fine. You're where you're at. But start getting rid of those hats as fast as you can, except for these three that you always keep as the business owner. And the first one is, I call it set the vision. But it's like big picture clarity. It's intentional. It's where we're going. It's why we're doing what we're doing. It's all that. Here's the big picture thing, and I call it setting the vision. Actually, Jim Collins calls it setting the vision, and I just say that's my favorite way to talk about it. So setting the vision is not a big, lofty vision statement, although there's nothing wrong with that. Setting the vision has three parts to it. Purpose, why we do this thing, beyond the money. Just what's the impact? What's the meaning? What's the significance, the passion, the fire? Why? So that's part of it. That's an important part of it. Then the values or the who, like what, who are the people that should be involved? What are the values that we share? And then the last part is the specific mission that we're up to right now, the very clear destination-oriented mission. So if you have purpose, values, mission in place, you have set a vision. That's your number one responsibility as a leader. You cannot delegate that hat. Now, you should invite, and I encourage you to invite your team into the process of co-creating that stuff with you. You'll get way more buy-in. You'll get better ideas. Like there's lots of benefits for inviting others along, but you cannot delegate the responsibility of setting the vision. It belongs with you. Second hat, build the team. You got to build the right team to go achieve that vision. And that is hiring, but it's also developing the people that you have. The most underutilized or unrealized leverage in business is usually people. Like we have them, we're already paying for them. Why not get more value, more production, more genius, more thoughts out of the same people that we have than just adding other people? And so I'm a huge fan for adding more people. We need to grow the business. But I'm a bigger fan of every time we increase somebody's ability, you just created leverage for the rest of their life. As long as they're serving your business, you're getting more out of that same resource. And maybe you're giving raises and you should, and maybe you're giving bonuses and you should as you're performing well. The incremental spend on those resources is far outpaced, if you do it well, by the incremental value that they can bring to the business when you develop them well. So set the vision, then build the team. The last hat that you cannot get rid of is get the resources. You have to provide the financial runway for the business to go achieve that big vision that you've set. And that doesn't mean go outside and get capital. It can mean that. In some cases, it's like, this thing is going to take off fast, but we need fuel. All right, let's go get some fuel. But most of the time, it's just like, let's execute. Let's grow the sales enough to fuel our own growth from within. So some combination of sales and outside capital, but it's your job to get the resources. We need the people and we need the resources to go achieve that vision. So if you're trying to figure out what does it mean to work on the business, I just gave you a pretty clear path for working on the business. Doesn't mean that you can magically have the time to do it. You have to figure that out. What are you going to say no to this week so you can go set the vision more powerfully? How are you going to carve out 2 hours, I don't know, every Friday to go build the team somehow? How are you going to spend the time to do the projections and look at cash flow and make sure we have the resources? Those are the types of things that you should be doing if you want to work on the business.
Love it. So we have, right, setting the vision, build the team, getting the resources in order to execute all this. With build the team, there was a key word there for me, leverage.
Yeah.
So let's double click on building the team, because I think this is important and it's been an issue over the past few years for a lot of small to mid-sized business owners where, you know, we talked the great resignation, right? We've had this tight labor market. I was at a conference last year with a bunch of, again, franchise owners all operating within the same system. And on the bus ride to a dinner one evening, I'm talking to this franchisee and, you know, hey, how's business going? He said, it's really challenging right now. It's a revolving door. I hire these employees, they come in, and a few weeks later, they're right back out the back door and I'm just constantly interviewing and hiring. It was a food concept. I'm like, man, that sounds tough, right? Things must be really challenging out here. So the next day, I'm sitting at lunch with one of the top operators in the same system. And they say, hey, Jim, how are things going with staffing? Are you finding this to be a big challenge for you right now? He's like, no, not really. Not really. Things are fine, right? So, you know, again, they're operating in different markets, but these two things can't both be true, right? Where it's like, we can't find people and we can't retain people, and another franchisee has no issues at all. So when I look at that, I think of two things: leadership and culture, right? Just so talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you're spot on. Leadership, culture. I didn't laugh at the great resignation. My eyes just opened up big for like huge opportunity for business owners who do this well. Because when you create an identity, and it goes back to that first responsibility of setting the vision. To me, you know, culture means a lot of things to a lot of people. So let's just take a second to talk about what the essence of real culture is. Culture, at the heart of it, has to do with our shared identity. What makes us, us? Why would I ever use the word we in business, right? And so as a brand new franchise owner, operator, you want to learn how to get good at hiring, here's your standard. You get those people that you're hiring, those kids, those teenagers who could care less about whatever in life, right? Because I hear all those tapes playing from a bunch of franchise owners. They're like, these guys don't care. They just do whatever. Anyway, if you get those people saying we as fast as you can, you're not just a leg up on the competition. You're like heads and shoulders above the competition. You get them saying we. And there are several of them who do this well. I know you weren't name dropping on purpose before, but there's a reason that a Chick-fil-A runs so much more volume through their shop than, you know, another one. I won't name any other, you know, as the...
But that has to be the first brand that comes to mind, right?
That's the first brand that comes to mind. I had a son, a teenager, that worked at Cane's. And I don't know if there's a Cane's where you live, but they did a great job of just really hitting culture. There's a story. There's always like an origin story. There's a set of values. This is what we believe in. And it's not just on the wall. They actually live that way. And they hire to it, and they lead to it, and they fire to it. And so there's a shared story. There's a shared cause. There's a purpose. There's meaning behind the brand. And I don't even like to use the word brand sometimes, but there's meaning behind the cause. Like we're doing something here that isn't just shelling out chicken for dollars, right? And of course, that business model needs to work, and it needs to be profitable and provide opportunities for the people. That culture piece is so huge. And we all say the words, yeah, we know we should have a great culture. Yeah, we did values work a few years back. But yeah, well, what are your values? Yeah. Oh, I'd have to look that up. Like, if you're not living it, if you're not teaching it, if it's not coming out in your language naturally all the time, you haven't really done that work. And so shared identity around purpose and values, that's at the heart of culture. And if you want to hire well, you create a living, breathing thing that is your business, separate from your identity as a business owner. We got to separate business owner from business and get that. That business deserves to have life. And the life stems from the purpose and the values. And you start to attract the people that belong there. You won't have the same turnover. You won't have the same complaints that all the other franchise owners have. You're going to create something different that transcends the transactional. You don't want this just to be about a job that get for a paycheck. It has to provide a paycheck. But you have to do something bigger than that. And when you do, you reap the benefits. So there is no great resignation when you create something around a common identity, a shared identity. It just changes everything. Sorry, I get a little passionate about that. No,
that's excellent. You remind me of one of the largest home services franchisor in the country. A few of their former employees worked for us for a period of time. They're really known for culture, and every meeting in that company starts with the mission statement. And they're a mission-driven company as well, so I think a prayer as well. But anyone in that company can recite that mission statement because it's recited multiple times a day.
Yeah.
Right? All hands in the center of the table. You have buy-in from every level of that company.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
And to some people, they're hearing that, they're going, weird. Ooh, right? They're holding hands and praying and stuff. Like, that's weird. Well, at the center of culture is cult, right?
It's cult, right.
No, there's a reason. Like, and it's, they're fanatical about their belief.
Yeah.
And they live it. And that doesn't make it bad, but it's not for everyone. And that's so cool, because now you get to put out what I call it a talent tractor beam, right? It's like the bat signal. Here's our unique thing. If this is for you, you flock to it. If it's not for you, you're like, ooh, I don't want any part of that. Great. Now you have a defined shared identity. You actually have a culture. Mix that Kool-Aid very strong. Like, the right people who like it, they're going to love it there.
They'll start drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Everybody else is like, no, not for me.
Right. And then they're just not a fit for the company. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So I read an interesting quote the other day. I want to say it was Steven Schwartzman, the co-founder of Blackstone. And I'm going to read this because it's a long one. But I think it's relevant here. He says, it's as hard to start and run a small business as it is to start a big one. You will suffer the same toll financially and psychologically as you bludgeon it into existence. Interesting choice of words. It's hard to raise the money and to find the right people. So if you dedicate your life to a business, which is the only way it will ever work, you should choose one with the potential to be huge. So Brett, if you were looking into starting a business that can quickly grow to 10 million, what are the characteristics of that business that you'd be looking for? Because there are some businesses that are just easier to scale to 10 million than others. Like you mentioned, a mosquito control business that was really growing. Now, we love that business. Back in 2021, believe it or not, that was the number one category that our clients invested in. But how many mosquito control companies get to 10 million? I don't know, probably a small percentage. So if you were looking to start a business, what would you be looking for, characteristics and attributes that you would focus on?
Yeah, well, in the franchise world, I'm just trying to know my audience here. In the franchise world, one location or one franchise of Mosquito Squad is going to be hard to grow to 10 million. And that's why you get franchisees who pick up several locations in the Phoenix area where I live. There's one big group that owns a ton of Jiffy Lubes, right? Because one Jiffy Lube, you're not going to grow to 10 million probably. But that's why you master the model and then you replicate. Mm-hmm. But that's different. The skill sets to do that over and over again is different than one unit of something yes. growing to 10 million plus. You don't in one franchise location, you don't necessarily have to have multiple layers of leadership, for example. And so you don't have to do a lot of strategic planning and try to align all these different departments and resources to move together, right? We want to take targeted, coordinated action. As we get bigger, that gets more challenging. In one location, that's not that hard. So we do it there and then we do it again over here. So personally, I would pick the one that didn't involve multiple locations, but that's franchise models are typically like that. So, but for me, you know, it's very attractive to look at like, you know, those high margin industries like SaaS, right? Software as a service. Mm-hmm. It's like the people are the asset. The software, I mean, the IP is the asset, but the people are the expense. And once you get that thing going, if you can get that software used by a lot of people, there's so much leverage in that model, right? So it's easy with information types of products, SaaS, but other services, I think you can do it in services. Right now, one of our members is a cleaning company and they came to us. They came to us at a 5 or 6 million, not 1 or 2 million, but they came to us at 5 or 6 million.
Are they cleaning homes or businesses?
They're cleaning businesses.
Okay, so a commercial janitorial services company. Yeah.
Services. Yep. And now they're, you know, last year they crossed over 20 million. This year they should be at 27 million or something like that. So it's growing relatively quickly because they have a higher priced monthly recurring revenue business.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So
yep.
Recurring revenue business with higher price points is a great model for scaling. So I'm not a business model expert by any means, but I've seen lots of different types of businesses. And so,
yeah, but higher, so it sounds stronger. Like those service-based recurring revenue models with high margins, awesome. Which we yeah. happen to agree with right now over a lot yeah. of these big brick and mortar, slimmer margin brands. So can we use some of these case studies like the cleaning company or the mosquito control company? You can kind of pick and choose.
Sure.
But so yeah. you met this company at this stage. Here's what you did for them. Here's what was wrong. Diagnosed the problem. Here's what we did to fix it. And here's where they are today.
Sure. And I'll pick one that may be more relatable to most franchise business. Let's start with the mosquito squad.
Okay.
Or budget blinds. We have one right now in budget blinds. So anyway, let's say just for kicks here, for generalization, a lot of franchise businesses kind of have that $1 million thing as a place. And you're like, here's a $1 million business as a franchise. And Mosquito Squad was no different. I think a lot of their franchises were around $1 million. And one of them came to us. He had been using the software that I talked about earlier, that sales and marketing software that we, and he saw how well we were scaling and he wanted us to teach him how to do the scaling stuff. So actually I need to clarify one thing, Justin. You mentioned like how do you diagnose and that kind of thing. And actually we don't do a lot of diagnosing, which sounds bad, because what we're doing is teaching a method. We're teaching a scaling method okay. and then coaching on the implementation. So it's not like a pure consulting or coaching approach that we take. It's more like, here's what works. Any business trying to make this transition from scrappy, gritty founder to capable business builder. Like there's just known things there.
You're implementing just a process that's proven to be successful.
Yes, okay. That's right. And we always start, and this is cheating a little bit because we already talked about it, but we always start with setting the vision. Those three roles we talked about, we always start there. And some of them have done some values work in the past, and some of them have tried to create a vision, but they just don't do it well. And they don't really live it the way we were talking about earlier. So we start right there. We said the foundation for any of this is total clarity around purpose, values, and the specific destination-oriented mission that we're up to right now. Like, what's the objective over the next 3 years? We're going to go summit that mountain over there. Okay, great. Now we know the direction we're going. We've got a bigger purpose. We know how we're going to operate with one another, and we know exactly where we're going. That clarity brings a ton of benefit right away. So they come at a million with a lot of reaction going on. Like, we know how to get and serve clients to the point that we've built this thing right now, and we're just rinse and repeat. We're doing it, like Michael Gerber says. And then it's like, okay, but we want to be able to do more. Well, we got to pull that business owner out of the day-to-day, and we need this foundation of purpose, values, mission. So we start there. Like working on the business is different than working in the business. So what does working on the business really mean? Well, we need that three-year mission. We need a strategy for how we're going to go achieve that mission. Some annual priorities, quarterly priorities. Like, what is the business building or working on the business rhythm look like? And so we help them learn how to plan for the future while we're delivering today's results. That little balancing act is a little tricky for a lot of business owners. So we teach them that, and that's built around a meeting rhythm. So annual planning, quarterly planning, a monthly thing, weekly operational dashboard review. So we help them get some structure and process around the working on the business side of things. And then we help them organize the work. So we say, we've got all these roles. Do we have total role clarity? Meaning, oh yeah. And then we'd say, of course I do. Like, here's a front desk person, or here's somebody at the cashier, or here's a cook, or whatever the roles are. They know the roles, but they don't always know the success measures for each role, the critical results or activities and how they're measured for each role. And so we teach them how to do that. So by teaching them how to organize what they're doing in the business, teach them how to organize the working on the business, all on a foundation of vision, of purpose, values, mission, they start getting bumps in productivity that they're like, how did this happen? Because we didn't teach them how to sell better. We didn't teach them how to make widgets faster or make hamburgers faster, whatever. We just taught them how to organize the work and lead people better. And all of a sudden, they're getting more out of the thing.
Additional benefits here, because I'm sure there's some people out there listening thinking, it sounds overwhelming. Like, 500K or a million just seems manageable to me, whereas 5-10 million seems like a lot to manage. In my opinion, it's actually the opposite. And you tell me how you feel, but there's a quality of life improvement. Once you have that infrastructure, those systems in place, you're not wearing all the hats. It's a grind when it's you trying to figure out how to do everything, right? We were at a keynote a couple of years ago with David Barr, who is former chair of the International Franchise Association. And his number was like 5 or 6 units, right? Maybe 3 to 6, I would say, or more, or having like 4 or 5 vans on the road. Life starts to get good, right? Like, now you're actually feeling the benefits of being a business owner. Otherwise, you're just kind of an employee of your own business. You're just working for yourself, grinding it out.
That's right. At first, and necessarily, we create this thing with us right in the middle of it. And until we can extract ourselves, I often use the analogy of Siamese twins. It's like the business and the business owner are inseparably connected. Their identities are shared. They're one. And we have to separate those and say, no, this business can and deserves to have life without you in the middle of the machine. Like, you can actually step out of that, rise above it, if you build it in a way that you can give ownership to other people. You'll like this analogy, I think, Justin, as I heard you talking about the grind at 1 million, because they're just in it, and they're sort of wearing themselves out, and they can't even contemplate what 2 or 3 million. They're like, I don't have 2 to 3 times to give of myself. I'm already giving myself fully here. And here's the analogy that I think you'll appreciate. So if you've ever ridden a multi-speed bicycle, you start out in a gear that makes sense for starting out. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I'm starting out. And this is manageable. And then I want more yield out of this bicycle. So what do I do? Well, experienced riders, they shift gears. But most of us just start pedaling faster. And we pedal faster and pedal faster and pedal faster. And so these people that are tapping out at a million, because they're giving it everything they have in that gear. And until or unless they shift gears, they're just going to burn themselves out. You cannot give enough effort in that gear to double or triple output. It's physically impossible. When you learn how to shift gears, I can actually stop giving as much effort. I can give less effort and get more yield out of that bicycle. But I don't know how to shift gears. And it's at those stages often that we circling all the way back to where we started. Those ones and threes of revenue, that's a natural gear shift point. And most of us don't learn what it takes to shift to that next gear. And if we would, and it might be hard at first and we have to figure some things out, but if we would shift gears, you're going to yield those benefits you described really well, where it's like, okay, now I actually have, my quality of life is going up. I've got more business. I got more trucks or more locations. My quality of life is going up and I'm not burning out anymore. Well, you actually learn how to shift gears and it's just way better.
Yeah, it's a good analogy. I feel like when I first started in franchising, you know, it was about the money, right? People wanted to create wealth. And obviously in any business, the money is important. But more and more today, it's about time. It's about freedom. It's about quality of life. It's about spending more time with family, being home to have dinner with the kids and being able to go to the soccer games, right? And just being around. And, you know, a lot of our clients are comparing business to job, right? Grinding it out, working 40, 50, 60 hours a week for someone else, flying around the country and around the world. And it could be just as bad in a business if you don't have those systems in place. It is also a grind, just like a job is, until you get to that level of scale where you start seeing those benefits. And then there's nothing better. Now you have the freedom, you have the control, you have this thing that no one can take from you that's generating all of this profit and the quality of life. And to me, yeah. Like, I don't know what your definition is of a business owner, but that's the definition of success, right? Building a profitable organization that doesn't require you to be involved in all aspects of the business.
That's right. Yeah. And it's not just the quality of life in that thing that you've built, but you actually have created a transferable asset. At some point, you're done. You could actually hand it off to somebody. Whereas when you're pedaling like crazy in that gear, if you stop pedaling, and so, you know, that bike slows down and eventually stops.
That's right.
And so you have to get to those higher gears where it's a lot easier to get what you're wanting in life out of that business when you have the scale that you're talking about.
Yep. Very true. Brett, if you were talking to someone who's in corporate America thinking, man, you know, I have skills, I have capital, I have some resources, maybe I could own my own business. How do I know if I'm an entrepreneur or not? And is this something that I could benefit from? And they're fearful about taking the leap, right? You talked about fear earlier on. What would you say to them?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know that I've ever answered that question because I've spent all my time helping people who've already made that choice, right? They've already gotten to a million and then I'm trying to help them go from there. But for people who have enough interest, enough inkling, enough like what if inside of them that they are considering that.
A little bit of ambition there. Yep.
Yeah, they're considering that leap. I would say for sure, if you're making choices about what kind of business to go into, pick something that you are passionate about. Pick something that will pull you forward when things do get hard, and they are going to get hard. And then just know that while Justin and I talk about all the benefits of scaling and, you know, shifting gears and getting to that next level, there is an initial period of grind. And like, you have to be willing to put in the work to make it happen. But if you're willing to put in the work and you're willing to learn, if you can be somebody who's open in your mindset and is growth oriented and you're listening to Justin and team and other places that can give you ideas, you can do it. Like, If I can do it, you can do it. This is the way I would say it. And my path was a little bit different, but I knew something, and you guys know something. You have expertise. You can leverage that expertise. You can start something around that expertise. Or you can take that expertise and go pick a proven model that somebody else would sell to you in a franchise and use your expertise to go grow that thing. If you're willing to put in the work and you have enough desire around it and you're willing to go figure it out from people who've already done that or have valuable insight, you got great chances to do it. There's not another country in the world where you have a better shot at making this happen.
Very true.
We live in a place, it's like, are you kidding me? So much abundance, so much opportunity, so many ways to make it happen. You can do it. You totally can.
It is so easy to create wealth in America, given a little bit of effort and ambition. It's so true.
Yeah.
So how does the process work? How does someone work with you? First of all, how do we find you? And then what does the process look like if someone could utilize your services?
Yeah, for any of you who are like, I'm in that 1 to 2 million range with a franchise, and I see that there's possibility. If you're tapped out in a market where, you know, there's 30,000 people in the town and you have the one Dairy Queen, like, I'm not going to be able to produce more market opportunity for you, right? So let's just give a little bit of caveats there. But if you're like, no, there's opportunity. There is opportunity. And I need to learn how to run my business better to go get it. And you're already doing a million, then we'd love to see you. We'd love to talk to you. We've helped several franchisees. I got to watch my language with you guys. We've helped several franchisees figure out how to grow beyond, you know, hit the president's circle, grow beyond the kind of the standard producing look. Our website is growwithelite.com. So G-R-O-W with elite.com. And we have programs that are a mix of content or proven method, like we know how to do this scaling thing, coaching on the implementation of that method, and then a community of seven-figure business owners who get together regularly, who are all working on the same stuff. And there's peer mastermind and accountability kind of stuff built in. There's group coaching calls, the quarterly events, and then there's individual coaching calls as well. So it's a menu of services that we've put together to help specifically these $1 to $3 million businesses grow to $3 to $10 million and beyond.
Very cool. Well, Brett, you are a wealth of information. So many good takeaways here today. Thank you so much for spending time with us. This was excellent.
Yeah, and you're asking great questions, Justin. I can tell that your podcast is awesome because of the types of questions you guys ask.
Thank you.